Help, I'm stepping into the twilight zone. Places on that house feels like being alone. My beacon's been moved under moon and star. Where am I to go now that I've gone too far? So you will come to know when the bullet hits the bone.
Submitted for your approval, the first episode proper of... Is it called The Twilight Groan?
Yes.
The Twilight Groan.
So you will come to know The Twilight Groan.
I am your host, Rish Outfield. Here, as always...
Cathexis.
Cathexis. My co-host, Apoplexis, is my niece. I don't know that I introduced her in the last episode, and... We're going to be doing several episodes of this, examining episodes of The Twilight Zone, none of which she has seen. And I chose To Serve Man from season 3, 1961, as our first episode. I felt of all of the episodes in the series, that's what I'd say one of the two most famous, and that's the one that can most easily be ruined. And so I thought if she read anything about it, somebody was bound to give away the punchline on that. And so we watched it today, and did you know what was coming?
I did not.
Can you very briefly recap what happens in To Serve Man?
Okay.
No, and it doesn't have to be briefly, however you want. We've not done this before.
So, it starts out, they see a spaceship in the sky. What are the aliens called?
The Canimits.
The Canimits come to Earth. They're very tall and ugly. They don't speak. You can hear them in your mind. And they say that they would like to help us progress as humans with our crops and intelligence and things like that. And so they start... Do they convince people to go on the ships? Like... They start taking masses of people away on their spaceships back to their planet with promises of wealth, gifts, things like that. And our main character, who worked for the government, tries to decode the book that the alien left. He's not able to. He has other people working on it. He then signs up to also go to their planet on a spaceship. As does his co-worker, secretary?
Yeah, I think she was a translator as well, so...
His co-worker, a woman. They get the title, and it is To Serve Man, but they haven't yet figured out the rest of the book. On his way to the spaceship, he's the next one in line. His co-worker runs up, screaming, and says, "Don't go, it's a cookbook." And he tries to get off, but he can't. And then it cuts to him on the spaceship again, eating some peas, unable to get off.
Okay, so I have, and I said this in the first episode, I've never lived in a world where I didn't know what To Serve Man was. But did you know immediately what the book was, what the book meant?
I did not. I did not see that coming.
Oh, okay, good. See, that's part of why I wanted to do these episodes is because of The Simpsons, the very first Treehouse of Horrors episode, I knew what To Serve Man meant. And so I've never been able to watch it and be surprised. But it's still really enjoyable knowing from the beginning. I mean, there aren't any clues, really, except for that they weigh people as they're getting on the ship. And you just assume it's like, well, because the ship can only hold so many. But I find it to be an excellent episode. And if it's the only one that you've seen, then you don't have anything to compare it to. But what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well written. And I had no inkling that that's what was going to happen at the end. And that I really enjoyed that. It was very surprising to me. And I don't know if that's because I'm not very... I wasn't paying attention very well, or if it's just written that way, but I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, see, that main character, the thing that's interesting is that he's not immediately suspicious of the aliens. The only person that is suspicious is the ambassador from the Soviet Union, and he's sort of a pig. He's like the only unlikable character in the whole show, and I think that's just some unsubtle commentary on what we thought of the Soviet Union. But if more people had been suspicious like him, lives could have been saved. Our translator guy, he works at the he works in the government dealing with spies and translating secret codes and that kind of stuff. And his immediate thought is that the Earth is going to become a Garden of Eden. Once all of our hunger has been taken care of and all of our war is gone, then everything's going to be great. And I find that interesting as somebody that's in the military adjacent to the military. The story might have been different if immediately they had said, why? Why would they do this? Why would they give without expecting anything in return? They have to want something else.
Exactly.
Which is definitely the attitude of today. But I can't think that the world has changed that much in 60 years that... And Serling says it at the very beginning. You know, it's a mode of altruism that we are not used to. The Kanamits come here and they're like, here's the solution to your problems. And it's free. There you go. But I don't know if the revelation of what they want us for would hit quite as hard if he had been suspicious at the beginning. Because he's just like, yeah, we're going to be out of a job. And what are we going to do? I'm going to go for 10 years to their world and see wonders. I don't know. I really enjoyed the episode, but I did have a dread through the whole thing because I knew what was coming. And that's part of the power of this show is it was early in television history and Serling didn't mind upsetting the audience. He didn't mind giving you not only an unhappy ending, but a terribly unhappy ending. This guy is being fattened up. He says to be an ingredient in someone's soup is what it says at the end of the episode. And he doesn't get away. He doesn't find a way to send a message to warn the other people so that even though he's sacrificed, we will live on. It just ends with us on the menu. And I don't know that there's any subtext in that story. I don't think it's about, hey, don't trust people that are friendly or don't trust, you know, somebody that's offering you a quick solution to your problems or anything. I think it's just what it is a fairy story about aliens that we think are benevolent and are not. And as we watch more episodes, you'll find some stories are like that, and then some are, that what this is really about is, but I could be wrong. Like I said in the first episode, Serling had troubles telling stories about the dark side of America or the dark side of human nature or the problems that people just turned a blind eye to every day. So he would hide them under a sheet of fantasy or science fiction or horror or, you know, fairy stories, those kind of things, magic and all that stuff, just to make it easier to swallow, you know, spoonful of sugar with the medicine. I don't know. You're probably not used to watching television that's this old.
Yeah.
Did you notice anything unusual, anything that rang untrue to you?
When they showed the close-up of the spaceship, it made me giggle a little bit. But that's just because I'm used to CGI and stuff.
And see, that spaceship was from a movie. It wasn't even from The Twilight Zone.
Oh,
it was
really?
Used. I think it might have been from Earth versus the Flying Saucers. It was a Ray Harryhausen stop-motion flying saucer because, you know, they couldn't afford to make their own spaceship. And then, you know, there were actual shots of the United Nations, actual shots of people from that era, you know, in Washington, D.C. And I thought that was interesting. You know, the show was not tremendously expensive. What did you think of Richard Kiel as the Kanamit?
That was very interesting. I thought that the special effects were really well done. I expected to see some sort of indication that it was plaster or glued on, but I didn't see anything. It just looked right. Is he on stilts or something?
Not really. He probably had elevated shoes.
Ah.
He was a tall, tall man, about 8 feet tall.
Oh, my God.
And he turned up in movies and television all the time in those days, usually playing monsters or aliens. He was most famously a villain in two of the James Bond movies in the 1970s called Jaws, and he had mechanical teeth that could bite through anything. And if my dad were around, he could tell you a number of things that he had done in the 60s or the 50s, just because my dad was one of those guys that could tell you, oh, this guy's from this and this guy has done that, and he would recognize their names. And I'm like that today with modern actors, but from stuff back then, from 1961, he was the only guy I recognized was Richard Kiel. And then the voice of the Kanemets I was telling you.
Yeah.
And I should have looked it up to see who it was. He was a famous, famous voiceover actor back in those days. And he has this super soothing, benevolent voice. And Richard Kiel has these dark circles around his eyes and sort of a slack jaw. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't actually speak. It's just a voiceover we hear when he speaks. And then he has an elongated bald head. Like, his brain is just way bigger than ours, kind of thing. But other than that, he's completely human. And it was difficult in those days to create an alien that didn't just look like a person.
Yeah.
That was the only way that they could do a monster or an alien, is just to put a guy in a suit. But as far as guys in suits go, this worked really well, I felt.
I thought it was very well done, yeah.
And there was only one woman in the whole movie, in the whole episode. And that would not have been unusual in 1961. But what do you think now? Well, I guess there was a woman in the line that was chattering on about, oh, how wonderful their planet is. And there's a place. Well, as soon as you land, there's stores and you can pick up whatever you want to wear for free. And they have this material. And what do you think as a young woman in 2019? About that, does it bother you when you see a show and it's all men or it's all white men?
No, honestly, I didn't even notice. It really doesn't bother me. I felt like the way they portrayed the coworker that worked for the government and decoded the message was great. No one was mean to her. No one was insulting to her. She's the one that figured out the message. I thought that was enough. That was fine with me. Yeah. I was not offended.
Well, hopefully you won't. You do have to remember that the people that were making television in those days were almost all white men.
Yeah.
And it would be, I'm not going to say it would be an accident, but it would be a special circumstance if you would see a black man or an Asian man or a woman in the main part back then. But you will see some things like that along the lines.
Yeah.
And sometimes things will seem more dated than others to your view today.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Soviet Union, obviously.
Yeah.
They mentioned the Soviet Union. The other thing that I found was a little dated in a funny way was that the spokesman for the United Nations, who is American, says, we have representatives of all of the important countries here. I thought that was pretty funny. And they talked about how Argentina is this barren wasteland where nothing grows. And I thought that was kind of interesting too, but...
Yeah, I thought it was... I think that the episode was very well done and they... didn't leave anything that needed to be in there out.
Okay, well, there's that. And without having watched a bunch of others, I guess you can decide later whether this was one of the best episodes or not.
Okay.
I certainly found it really tight. It starts with him already on the ship, and then it flashes back to how he got there, and then it ends with him on the ship. And it was about, 28 minutes long?
Yeah, it was
27
long.
Minutes long. And it just seemed about perfect length.
It did.
The fourth season of The Twilight Zone, Serling thought maybe they could tell bigger stories. So they went on to an hour an episode. And I don't know that we're going to talk about any of those episodes. They're all too long.
Oh.
And maybe it's because for 4 years or 3 years, we've been used to episodes that are half an hour long. And there's an economy of storytelling. You know, it's just like he was forced to sum everything up in three sentences instead of in a full page of dialogue. And so anyhow, that was it. That was our first episode. Is there anything you want to talk about?
No, I don't think so. I enjoyed the episode.
As always, let us know if there are episodes that you would like us to talk about. I can always talk about The Twilight Zone. I love the show, and I like to watch it thinking about what an audience in 1961, how they responded, what their mindset was. Did somebody in 1961 know what Argentina was like? And that there were all sorts of industry there and farms and all that? Or would they just have assumed, oh, okay, it is a barren wasteland because they said it is? I don't know. But certainly by 61, they were used to being coddled by television. And so I can't imagine how it would have felt to know that the whole planet is being fattened up for the slaughter at the end of this episode. We've become way more cynical. And like I said, I think today's audiences would immediately be suspicious of the aliens, of the Kanamits. And maybe Serling chose a somewhat frightening looking guy to be the face of the Kanamits so that we would be afraid of them at first, instead of having it be like a super beautiful person that comes. So you're just like, oh, this is too good to be true. But yeah, there are any number of ways you could have interpreted that idea of, you know, the alien comes and what is it going to look like? What will they look like? They reveal that at the very beginning, and he's, I guess he's frightening. I don't know, he's got a beard too, and that is strange. And I'm wondering, at one point there are two Kanamits and they're talking to each other, and it's just a split screen with two Richard Kiels. Did the other one have a beard as well?
I thought that they looked identical.
Yeah, they probably were. And that's just kind of neat that they would say, okay, they're all played by him.
Yeah.
Because there aren't a lot of people that look like him.
Yeah, I thought he was a very, very good fit for that. He almost looked cuddly, almost? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Like he would give a big hug.
Sorry, we've got a plane going over. I wonder if we should wait for it to stop. I decided to come out because the sun was shining and the... Let me just wait for a second. You can hear the crickets too, but I imagine that just adds to the atmosphere rather than taking away from it. You may be the first person ever to call Richard Kiel cuddly. You know, he was just such a big guy that, you know, he wasn't just going to be cast as a dad or a next door neighbor or anything like that. He was always going to be cast as freaks or villains. But there's that. Like I said in the first episode, almost all of these people are no longer with us.
Yeah.
And so it would be fun to sit down with him and ask him, what did you think of the makeup once you were inside it? And was that hard to hold your head up that way? You know, was it heavy?
I wonder what that was made of.
And what was the audience reaction in 1961 to the punchline of the story? And you know what I mean by punchline, right?
Yeah.
And yes, like I said about the comments, let us know what episodes that you'd like to see, or let us know how you felt the first time that you saw this episode. I don't know. It's profoundly disturbing, the idea that you are going to be eaten, that you are, that you're just an animal to them.
I laughed.
You laughed?
Yes. I giggled.
Wait, why?
I don't know. It was just, the way she said it, it was kind of... I don't know why. I just felt the need to giggle. It was very entertaining to me.
Your name is very entertaining to me. What does cathexis mean?
You'll have to find out for yourself.
All right. Well, I will be back sometime soon with another episode.
And you'll find out what my name means on the next episode.
Of?
The Twilight Groan.
I'm going to meet with an elderly, ugly woman who is going to be the Twilight Crone. She'll be our co-host. I have been Rish Outfield.
And I am Cathexis.
And in your daily dealings, do what you can to serve man. Good night.
The Twilight Throne is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. That means you're free to share the file, to download it, to save it, to listen to it, to delete it and forget about it, but you cannot take credit for it, change the file, or try to sell it. That's fair, isn't it? In any show. Next time on The Twilight Groan, we'll be talking about Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Can you very briefly recap what happens in To Serve Man?
So, aliens come to Earth. They say they want to help us. And then it ends up that they would like to eat us instead.
Okay, well, it doesn't have to be that. It doesn't have to be two sentences.